Okay, so today we are going to be starting into a series. I'm going to have to keep turning, I'm really sorry, because this one keeps flashing at me and it's a little bit disconcerting. It's called Heroes of the Faith, men and women who live faithfully and fearlessly for God. Now, if we look for heroes like we would kind of think of, we search through the Bible, we don't see anybody in particular wearing capes, because apparently that's what a superhero has. There is one with a coat, however, but none with capes. So how do we define what a hero is? And the thing is, for each one of us, it's going to look different because our ideas and understanding of what a hero might be will look very different. But for the purposes of the next coming weeks, as we look to certain people, whether they be in the First Testament, whether they be in the New Testament, or to some who are still living today, we're going to be looking to those people who are... Could you just... Please? Here we go. Okay, so we're going to be looking at men and women who are determined to follow God no matter what the cost is. And we're going to be looking at people who have lived and who live with wholehearted loyalty to God. And people who are trusting, who choose to trust Him, to be obedient to Him, no matter what else is going on around them. The people who have the courage to persevere, to keep going. No matter what it is that they might have to face, They have been, and they are graced by God. And through it all, they're keeping their eyes on the goodness of God and on the promises of God. None of them were perfect, because none of us are, only Jesus is. However, as they have surrendered themselves, they've surrendered their lives and their situations to God, God was able to do what only God can do, to the glory of God and for the good of His people. So these heroes that we are going to be looking at will inspire us, and they'll encourage us, and they'll challenge us, and ultimately they'll draw us closer to God. Now this morning, I'm going to be starting off with Joseph. This is, as Guy said, probably the longest title ever. Forsaken, falsely accused and forgotten, but he maintained integrity in the face of injustice. Now we read about Joseph in Genesis 37, jump a whole chapter to 39 all the way through to 50. It's a very full and rich and deep story. It takes 13 chapters of the book of Genesis. And the story echoes back to creation and resonates all the way through to Jesus. But for the purpose of this morning, we are only going to be looking at Joseph through the lens of injustice and integrity. So Joseph is one of 12 sons of Jacob, and Jacob being the last of Israel's ancient patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph is at the center of his family's drama. It's a story of favoritism, of jealousy, of hatred, of murderous intentions, of seduction, of suffering, of wisdom, discernment, and eventually reconciliation. Eat your heart out, Shortland Street, or whatever the latest TV saga is. It's in the Bible first. And we begin the story of Joseph as a teenager when he was 17 years old. Joseph was the firstborn of Jacob's beloved wife, Rachel, and his dad's favorite, born to him in his old age. That's why he was his favorite, because he was born to him in his old age. There was another brother who came even later, but Joseph was the beloved son. And so what does this mean for him? It means he gets this pretty spectacular coat and major jealousy from his brothers. And not only is he a daddy's boy who seems to narc on his brothers, but he also has two dreams which come from God. Where in the first one, the interpretation of it is that his 11 brothers are going to bow down to him. And then in the second dream, his parents are going to bow down to him along with his brothers. Now, upon telling his jealous brothers these dreams, their hatred for him turns murderous. His is a very dysfunctional family. And while Joseph is obedient to his father and to God, who is the one who reveals to Joseph a part of God's plan for him through these dreams, it ends up costing him his home and his inheritance. Now, his brothers didn't end up killing him, thanks to his older brother, but they do sell him into slavery with family like that who needs enemies. So at the age of 17, what we have, and I'm sorry I couldn't kind of work out the lines and everything, we have the favored son who then becomes the forsaken brother who then becomes sold into slavery. And he's on his own. All that family have gone. But he is not. Now, Joseph would have heard about God, El Shaddai, God Almighty, most likely from his father and his grandfather. Imagine both of these men, along with all the others, would have shared around the table, would have shared around the campfire, the amazing stories of Abraham and his encounters with God, along with the blessings and the promises spoken over their family line, and how God had amazingly wrestled with his father, allowing him to live, but causing him to limp. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob was going to become Jacob's God too. However, he wasn't going to receive instructions directly or have angelic visitations like Abraham, nor is he going to have encounters as Isaac did, nor was he going to get into a wrestling match with God like his dad. Joseph was going to experience God through his constant presence with him. And that constant presence would offer him strength and hope and wisdom and discernment to help keep him living honorably through times of challenge and suffering. And Joseph's story tells us over and over again, as we're going to find out, that God was there in all of Joseph's circumstances, as God is here for us in all our circumstances. Joseph may have been forsaken by his brothers, but not by God. The slave dealers who bought Joseph from the brothers took Joseph to Egypt, and he was sold to Potiphar, a high official in the Egyptian court. Okay, and we read in Genesis 39, 2 and 4, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man and served in his Egyptian master's household. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made everything he did successful. So now we see that Joseph is working in the home of Potiphar, and Potiphar was captain of the guard, second only to Pharaoh himself. Because God was with him, Joseph conducted himself with integrity and honesty, living and serving to the best of his abilities before God and his master. And because of that, he was promoted to the highest position. How things had changed for Joseph. He had been the favored son, forsaken by his brothers, sold into slavery, and then because of the favor of God, he became the head of the household, second only to Potiphar. We often hope that life will take a quick trajectory up. Come to Jesus, life will be great, all the way to heaven. However, like me, mostly, I'm sure, that you know that there are ups and downs and roundabouts, and life goes all sorts of ways. Sometimes good things happen, and that's fantastic, and sometimes bad things happen, and that's not so good. Sometimes they're of our own making, they're our own mistakes, and sometimes things happen at the hands of others. However, Joseph, being blessed by God, was having the opportunity to use his godly wisdom and administrational skills with integrity in his workplace. Life was going really well for Joseph, until Joseph starts to be noticed by Potiphar's wife. We read in the Bible that Joseph was well-built and handsome, and it very plainly says she wants to go to bed with him. Which reminds me, I don't know if you remember this, Ray, we used to do Bible in schools up at Waikiki Primary School, and we used to deal with the junior school, and we might have had 60, sometimes 75 and 6-year-olds come. We had a very prescriptive lesson that we would have to bring, and one of the lessons that we had to bring was the story of Joseph being seduced by this woman. It was my turn to bring the message, and it was really difficult. So I you know, thinking on your feet, I had prepared, I was thinking on my feet, though, what am I going to do to change it up? And it was like, and Potiphar's wife said to Joseph, come and have a cup of tea with me. No, I cannot have a cup of tea with you. You can only have a cup of tea with your husband. Ta-da! But in saying that, when we invite you to a cup of tea after church, we truly mean it is just a cup of tea. Okay. Yeah, you know. Don't want to get to the end and then have to do it then. Okay. But Joseph refuses her time and time again. And he does everything even not to be in the same room as her. And he does that, stating, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house because everything he owns he has entrusted to me, to my care. And no one is greater in this house than I am. And my master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? But a woman scorned is not a good thing. And she ends up falsely accusing Joseph of seducing her. Now Potiphar, believing his wife over Joseph, is furious. And he sends Joseph to jail. And so now, having done nothing wrong, and in fact, behaving justly and with integrity and honor to both his master and to God, Joseph suffers unjustly. So we have the favored son, who is forsaken by his brothers, who is sold into slavery, becomes a slave, the head of the house, being falsely accused and put into prison. This up and down and up and down walk of Joseph's life. What had Joseph done wrong to deserve this? What happens in life? Well, sometimes we ask that question. What have I done to deserve this? And why should he endure such suffering when he acted with integrity? But God. For even in prison, we hear of God's constant presence with Joseph and how he works through Joseph's skills as a manager to improve his and others' situation in the jail. For we read in Genesis 39:21 that the Lord was with Joseph and remained loyal to him. See, when everyone else had abandoned him, God did not, because God does not leave us and he does not forsake us. And he caused the jail's commander to think highly of Joseph. And the jail's commander put all the prisoners in the jail under Joseph's supervision. And he was the one who determined everything that happened there. Nope, I've done too many. There we go. God's favor was with and upon Joseph. Now, while Joseph is in this position of authority, there is one morning when two of his prisoners wake up and they look a little bit unwell. And Joseph says, what's wrong? And we're like, we're feeling a little bit dejected because we both had dreams last night and we don't understand what it's about. And there's no one here to interpret them for us. And Joseph says, well, don't interpretations belong to God? Describe your dreams to me. And he listens, and then, trusting God's interpretation, he explains the dreams of Pharaoh's cupbearer and Pharaoh's chief baker. Now, the cupbearer's interpretation was more favorable than the chief baker's. And so Joseph says to him, when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. Because I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon. See, Joseph didn't forget how he had got to this place, you know, the ups and downs of his life. But despite them all, he continues to live right before God and before those in authority over him, choosing integrity in the face of injustice. He hasn't forgotten, but he has remembered, because what he has remembered in this journey of it all is God's faithfulness to him all the time. Now, you could imagine, as the cupbearer goes away, and he lives, and it's great, read the story. He's waiting for something to happen, for him to be remembered. And he's waiting, and then he realizes that he has been forgotten. If we were reading this for the first time, we would be enraged. We would be like, where is justice for this man? He's been forsaken by his brothers. For he was the favored son, forsaken by his brothers, sold into slavery, becomes head of the household, falsely accused, put into prison, interprets dreams of others, and then he's forgotten. It takes 2 more years of Joseph being in jail, 2 years since the cupbearer forgot his name, forgot about him before he is remembered. 2 years is a long time. We know it's not Joseph's preferred timing. However, in the greater scheme of things, in the largest story, in God's timing, it's absolutely perfect. And what brings it all about is that Pharaoh, the highest authority in the land of Egypt, has a dream that needs interpreting. And you can just imagine the cupbearer going, I know somebody, I can help you, and I've forgotten about him. But he remembers Joseph. And so we see that Joseph is brought before the Pharaoh, who says, I understand that you can interpret dreams. Again, how easy it would have been for Joseph to say, yeah, I'm the one who can understand your dreams, and I can give you the understanding and the meaning behind them, to say anything with the hope and the possibility of getting out of that jail. But just like he wouldn't succumb to Potiphar's wife's advances, he wouldn't take the credit for something that only God could do. And so this man of integrity and humility says, I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. And so Joseph does. He interprets the dream that Pharaoh had, advising him that there will be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. Not only does he do that, but he advises Pharaoh to put a wise and discerning man in charge of the land, and then unfolds the great master plan of what Pharaoh needs to do to ensure the well-being of the people of Egypt. And who might that wise and discerning man turn out to be? It's Joseph. And he, in the end, would rise to become the governor of the land, now second only to Pharaoh. So under his care, food would be collected and stored in the years of plenty, so that in the time of famine there was enough food, not only for the people of Egypt, but for the surrounding nations, and ultimately for his own family, the family who was growing into the nation of Israel. Now, the story goes on, and there's a whole lot more family drama that happens, and I do encourage you to read on about it. But again, we want to come back to the fact that Joseph is a man of integrity in the face of injustice. All of this story of Joseph being the favored son, forsaken brother, sold into slavery, becomes the head of the house, falsely accused, put into prison, interprets dreams, but then gets forgotten, only to be brought out of prison and put into the second highest place in the land. All of that took 13 years. 13 minutes, it can be hard to hold your integrity. 13 days, it could be hard. 13 months, but 13 years, this man, knowing that the presence of God was with him, equipping him and empowering him, he was able to hold his integrity and his honor before man and before God. You see, what started out as a story of jealousy and hatred could have easily turned out so differently. Yet because Joseph was aware of God's unfailing presence with him, which strengthened him to endure all that he had to do, it empowered him, as I've said, right from the start, to remain to be that man of integrity. And so God ends this part of the story seeing Joseph honored as he blesses and he saves his people. The wisdom and the divine understanding that Joseph gains throughout those years means that he can say to his brothers, even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good in order to preserve a numerous people as he is doing today. God's greatest story within his story can sometimes only be revealed over time. And the same is true for us. God's greatest story within our story can only be revealed over time. What Joseph's life shows us and points us to is God's hidden work within human history. And we read it right throughout the scriptures. And as people share their lives, we read a small story, a small portion, good or bad, but it's part of a bigger picture of what God is doing. And because of this, we are invited also to look beneath the surface of our lives and to consider and wonder what it is that God may be doing. We won't necessarily get the whole picture. Sometimes and often it's only on reflection as we look back that we can see what God is doing. But that we might be aware that God could be doing something, that God is doing us. It reminds us that we, like him, can know that God is at work and we can trust that he is. That even when it might not look like it, when it might not feel like it, God has not forgotten us. God is working. God is moving. You know, God's ways may seem mysterious or hidden. And for many of us, there are difficulties along the journey of our lives, but the anchoring truth is that God's unfailing love and his commitment to us does not depend on our human strength or on special circumstances. And Paul writes, we know that God works all things together for good for those who love God, who are called according to his purpose. And that verse only makes sense to us as we continue to trust that God is working for good in every aspect of our lives and that we're open to trusting that God knows better than we do. And so as we come to a close and as we come to communion, I wonder if we might be able to take some time to consider how Joseph's heroic story of integrity over injustice might resonate with you. How it might be that his story might inspire you. Maybe it's that you have been keeping your eyes on Jesus, trying to hold to the way, the truth, and the life of him, despite the challenges and the opposition that you're facing. And you might be at day 13, at month 13, but that Joseph held the line 13 years, going through the ups and the downs, and he remained faithful to God, and God continued to remain faithful to him. God remains faithful to us. I might encourage you to seek out how it might be that what it is that God is doing in your life. You know, wherever you find yourself and you go, I don't understand, maybe there is a bigger story. Maybe there's something that is yet to be outworked that I don't know, that we don't know what it might look like. But that story will encourage us to say, hey, I'm going to continue to hold the line. I'm going to continue to keep my eyes on Jesus. I'm going to continue to block out the noises and hold true to his way and his truth and the life that he offers us. And how it might challenge you. There might be, while he held to his integrity and to honesty before God, there might be things in our lives that we've kind of stepped out of the light a little bit into the shade and not been so honest or integral. And that's okay. It's not okay that we've done that, but it's okay for that to be revealed and for us to be challenged in that, because that's the work of the Spirit to say, hey, and to draw us back into the light, into the path of Jesus. Or maybe it draws you closer to God. Maybe because of that deep truth resonates within you that God is with you and he is for you and he will never leave you or forsake you, and that God is working all things together for the good of those who love him. As communion is being held out, passed out, I just want you to take a couple of moments to recognize which one of those Joseph's story might resonate with you. As the communion comes, I'm just going to ask you to hold on to it, which is our practice here, and we will take communion together.